You're listening to the Moon Mason Experience. I'm Moon Mason. Today, we're going to be chatting with Camille, who is a Reiki master teacher, a medium, a tarot and Akashic records practitioner, and a community herbalist. She has a healing business called The Medicine Goddess and holds a degree in acting from the University of Southern California and is a self-taught musician, and she's a friend of mine. So welcome, Camille Langston. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm super excited.
So we talked not too long ago about the Sacred Sisterhood, and we got into a lot of discussions that I thought was really interesting. But before we dive into that, why don't you tell the audience how we met?
Oh, yeah. So we met, I think it was, what, 2.5 or maybe 3 years ago now, at an ayahuasca ceremony, my first ayahuasca ceremony, actually. And I was kind of gifted the ceremony, so I decided to go and try it out. And, you know, with reverence for what I had heard about ayahuasca already, and I had been wanting to try that type of medicine, but I didn't want to force it. I just, you know, I kind of sent out the signal to the universe that when I'm ready for it, the opportunity will appear. And so the opportunity appeared and I went, and we sat in ceremony together. And yeah, it was like, you know, 12 hours of intense healing. And yeah, we just kind of kept in contact after the ceremony, and here we are today.
So how long before did you send that call out, or knowing that you had wanted to try it? Because I know for me, it was actually 3 years from the time I knew I wanted to do it to the time I actually did it for the first time.
Yeah. Let me see. It was probably about 2-ish years that I had been, you know, hearing and maybe even hearing about it for another 2 years before that. But, you know, maybe 3 years prior to the experience presenting itself, I was like, oh, well, you know, that actually might be something that I can see myself doing one day when I'm ready, when I feel like I find a shaman, a community that I connect with, and where I feel like I can be safe in a safe environment doing it. But yeah, I think that's really important. But yeah, it was about 3 years to 2 to 3 years of just waiting and being patient.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, because I think some people think that they have to just know that they're going to do it and go do it. You know, it takes some time to really do it.
Yeah, it's definitely not something you want to just do like without researching who you're doing it with, where you're going to be doing it. You know, it's not something to just consume. It's an ancient sacred plant, and it should be treated as such.
Yeah. So I remember after the ceremony, like I remember before the ceremony, there was some talking, but I don't think that we really connected. And then I remember after just kind of looking at you and being like, she's so beautiful. And then, you know, we talked more and you were like, I don't think I'm ever going to do that again. And is that still?
Yeah. Yeah. So to get in more into like my experience before, cause yeah, I don't think I talked to really anybody, cause it was, you know, the vibe in the room, as you remember, was very like meditative, and it wasn't like super chatty. It was like, you know, we were all preparing to, take this medicine. And it was a small group though. So we kind of got to hold space for each other, but yeah. I do remember that the jape that they served me made me sick, or, you know, as they say in ayahuasca ceremonies, made me well. but the jape actually made me purge, which is very rare, I heard, because that was my first time doing jape. And for those that don't know, jape or rape is like tobacco powder that they kind of blow up your nose into your sinus cavity. And it clarifies the mind and kind of just gets you ready to take this plant medicine. It's an ancient technique. And honestly, it's not for everybody. And it apparently isn't for me. So I found that out. And once the shaman saw me purge with the hape, he was like, oh, you're very sensitive. And I was like, yes, highly. So I actually only ended up taking one cup of medicine, and the shaman refused to serve me more medicine after that, because it did make me feel so unwell during it. And it wasn't anything where I was like, you know, I thought I was going to die. It really just felt like for 12 hours I had the flu. And so I was like bedridden. I couldn't really move around a lot. Had no real energy, and I was present for a lot of it. I wasn't really out of my body too much because I didn't take that much of the medicine. And I had one vision that was pretty significant, but it honestly wasn't any more like sparkly or you know, transcendent than the visions that I have when I go into deep meditation. And you know, not everybody not everybody sees visions to begin with. But I, you know, am kind of trained in doing things like that. So yeah, my experience with the ayahuasca was just 12 hours of like a pure discomfort. and right after it, I was like, yeah, I don't know if I would want to do that again, because the medicine made me so viscerally sick. You know, and then I felt better. It's not like ayahuasca makes you like actually have the flu. So it didn't stay around for longer than that time, but it definitely, was uncomfortable the whole time that I took it.
Do you think that it did give you healings though? Cause you know, sometimes, you know, it works in such mysterious ways, you know, physically too.
Yeah. For me, it wasn't really, my personal experience. It was more so witnessing other people's healing breakthroughs during the ceremony. And that was, so I'm definitely like, I'm open now to taking ayahuasca again. But again, it's still not something I would just jump into just because it presents itself. It would have to be the right place, right time, right people. But I do, even though I didn't have a big like shiny stereotypical experience with ayahuasca, I respect it as a medicine to create change and healing in people's lives in deep and profound ways. And I know that that is, you know, one of the purposes of this plant, of this medicine. And I respect that a lot. I just didn't have that experience personally.
Yeah, I don't think I told you this, but he had another ceremony at his house and with the same shaman, and I went. I don't know if I told you this. I went, and then like I wasn't feeling the shaman. I don't want to say his name right now, but
yeah,
we were having some conflict of just butting heads, and I was like there and everything, and I was talking to him, and then we talked separately, and then I ended up leaving because I just personally didn't resonate with him. It is really important who you do it. Yeah. So I never did that before, but I felt like, you know, I really listened to my intuition about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think since, he stopped working with that shaman, so that's good. And, you know, also I don't think that there are any mistakes. Like the fact that I didn't have a big aha moment with the ayahuasca, like maybe my higher self, my ancestors, my guides knew that I didn't need to open myself up in a huge way like that in front of all those people that I really didn't know. You know, I knew the person who was hosting the event very well, but in terms of like the other people that were in the room, including the shaman, I just met them that day. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I feel like I had exactly the experience that I was ready to handle. Yeah. And I'm, you know, there are no mistakes. So,
I'm guessing that you did get a physical healing, and you know what I mean? For sure though, because that's how it works.
Probably. Yeah. It was a while ago now, so I don't really remember I don't personally remember right now there being any significant shifts in my body. I think more than anything, it just showed, it proved to my own self a willingness to go, and a a willingness to go deeper into my own subconscious. And I think that in and of itself, that willingness to say yes to an experience where that's pretty much the goal, triggered other things within me. But in terms of like physical healing and stuff like that, I don't remember having anything like that. But I do think that the simple, you know, it's just like energy builds up, you know? And I think that me saying yes to that ceremony was a catalyst in several ways for other actual, more intense for me experiences of the subconscious.
So one thing I remember you saying is because I always have really kind of powerful experiences where I'm making noises and I'm kind of like, it just overcomes me. And I remember like being like, I'm sorry guys, if I was like too loud. And I remember you being like, no, it actually made me feel comfortable. And I was like, and
oh yeah.
Why did that make you feel comfortable?
I think it was, you know, I felt like some of the people were going through this battle within themselves of like, of feeling free enough to express with their body or with their voice what they were actually experiencing, because we were in a room with, you know, several other people. And I think when I was hearing you going through what you were going through, it made me feel comfortable because it sounded, the vibration of whatever noises you were making just felt real. And so it relaxed me in that way, where I was like, okay, someone right now is, and you know, I wasn't really able to look at you because I was sick myself at the time, but what I heard, I was like, okay, someone's going through something real and that's good. You know, that's a good thing. Like I was just glad that you weren't like trying to restrict yourself or hold it in for the sake of, you know, all that stuff. And the fact that you're a woman too, and that you just, were free in your expression was also comforting.
Yeah, that was not my favorite ceremony, but
yeah,
but it was what it was, you know. Yeah, and not like you said, nothing is a mistake. So
yeah,
so that's, yeah, you'll definitely, I mean, I can let you know some good shamans, and when we're done, that's really good and powerful. But I wanted to also talk about, so then we got together not too long after for an intimate cacao ceremony. And after some people left, it was you, myself, and then two other spiritual, beautiful women, and then two other guys. So it was six of us having a conversation. And in that conversation, I didn't know this about you three, but all four of us had been celibate for, I feel like the average was about 2 years. And I was like, wow, this is such a difference than it would be 4 or 5 years ago, when it's girls sitting around talking about, oh, I had sex with this guy and he screwed me over, or, you know, or he's a, like, you know, this or that. And I'm just like, wow, things have really changed in my life. So let's talk a little bit about celibacy. And I know neither of us are now anymore, but what brought you to that realization that you wanted to refrain from having sex?
I think this is something that we all know subconsciously and even consciously, but we don't really embody it or grasp what the meaning really is. But sex is something that is really so potent and powerful, and it is like the most potent and direct way you can share your energy with someone else directly, you know? And I don't think we as a society honor it enough. And then I think also in our attempt to honor it, we end up being on the extremes of the spectrum. So we're either having a lot of sex, or we're teaching about abstinence, you know? And it's like, where is the happy medium? Where is, you know, the beautiful sexual experiences that are healing and reciprocal and all that stuff? And I just felt like I needed a reset to really explore internally within myself what sex means to me, what type of sex I really wanted to be having, and as a way to release the negative sexual experiences that I had up until that point that continued to drain me even after we were done having sex, obviously. So yeah, that was my reasoning of, and you know, on a very human level, I was just tired of the bullshit. Like I did not want to keep sharing this, you know, very special energy of mine with these losers that I kept picking.
was that your longest celibacy period, and how long was it?
I think I was celibate for 9 months, and then I towards the end of that 9 months, I started dating someone, but I told them like, I'm celibate right now and it's my goal to make it to January. And so we agreed that we wouldn't have sex until then. And yeah, in January I broke my celibacy. So it was about that long. And then what was the other part of the question?
You mentioned that he was like a twin flame, or that you felt so.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I definitely felt a really strong connection with him. And the fact that, he was like also on the same vibration as me at the time. Cause when I remember we went on our first like real date, cause he's someone that I was like kind of friends with before we started dating, and you know, I just saw him around all the time and always hoped that we would go on a date, but it just never happened until then. But when it did finally happen, we connected like instantly. And I remember telling him, you know, at the end of that first date, like, I'm celibate right now. I don't want to have sex with anyone because of A, B, and C. And I gave him my reasonings, and he was like, actually, he's like, that's completely fine with me, because I've kind of been thinking that I want to be celibate. He's like, I just don't really feel the desire to share my sexual energy with anyone right now. And I was like, great, perfect. Let's continue to hang out and have a good time and just like leave that part of it, on pause. And so that's what we did. And, you know, I don't really like to say that I have regrets, because I like to take responsibility for my actions and inactions. The relationship with this person though ended like so fast, in a matter of like, I think we made it to like 4 months, and then I broke up with him because he still, even though we had waited to have sex and all this stuff. And I think this is important too, because I think a lot of, women and femme people especially try to like hold out from having sex with partners to like, to almost manipulate the partner into giving them what they want, right? Or to committing to them. And that was never my intention. But I think a lot of people do that. But it was interesting to me that I had pretty much done it right. You know what I'm saying? Like, I had met this person. I was friends with them first. I communicated my needs and desires to them. They said yes. And we held each other accountable to that. And then it still went south after, you know, which is, you know, 4 months is usually like the time where a lot of my relationships go south. And so that to me was like almost an experiment where it was like, okay, so sex isn't really the presence of sex or the lack of sex isn't really the issue for me personally, right? That's pretty much what that relationship showed me. And so I'm grateful, for that connection and for, that partner's ability to be present with me in that way specifically, to reveal that type of learning for me. That was a good moment. That's something good that I can take away from that relationship, even though it did end anyway. And there were things I still wasn't getting that I wanted from that relationship, with or without the sex. So that was a good moment of reveal.
So, but was it sex? How, like, was it really a beautiful and amazing experience, or was it not aligning like how you wanted it to when you finally did it?
The sex itself was great. Yeah. Like, the sexual chemistry was all there. Yeah, for sure. I have no complaints about that. My complaints with that relationship come with the fact that when we weren't having sex, he was very wishy-washy about me and making time to see me and, you know, times of like, of, you know, quality time together, which, I communicated to him at the end and we're still friends to this day. So I don't have any, definitely have no ill will towards this person at all. Always wishing them the best, but yeah, that was, I think I remember literally telling him like, you can't give me what I want. So out of respect for your time and my time, like this relationship should probably end.
And then, so where are you at now with your sexual experiences or relationships?
I'm actually kind of back in a little bout of celibacy, but, I'm just kind of, I learned through that first longer bout of celibacy that refusing myself pleasure or desire also isn't the way to go for me. And, you know, when it gets to the point where like you haven't had sex for so long and like just your physical body is craving that type of connection, to go ahead and like deny yourself that, I think can also get to an unhealthy level. But for me right now, I had another experience with the twin flame back in March, back when the pandemic started to happen, of course. And I met this twin flame and it was the same story. They weren't ready. They were scared. They were intimidated. And I just like, it was so painful to experience that again. Even with all the growth and all the like wisdom that I have, I just realized like, I really can't make anyone grow faster than they're willing or ready to grow. So, and then I also realized like, even if I was in relationships and I wasn't having sex, I was giving a lot of my time, mental energy, emotions to trying to find a partner. And I just didn't want to do that. I don't want to do that right now. All of my energy is focused onto my business, onto my talents, my life purpose, really, why I'm here on earth. And why I'm here on earth is not to be someone's wife. Why I'm here on earth is to, you know, be a healer and be an artist and to do it to my greatest, you know, ability, and to make sure that I am in alignment with my life purpose at all times and doing the things and receiving the messages that I need to make that a reality and worry less about, you know, being in a committed relationship, you know. And if that happens, if that committed relationship works out for me, that's great. But I've also had difficult conversations with myself of like, if I get to the end of my life, of this lifetime, and I have a partner, but I haven't achieved like my life purpose things in terms of career and abilities and things like that, I would be unhappy with myself. However, if I got to the end of my life and I had achieved all my goals or most of them, and I could, you know, rest easy in the fact that I had surrendered to what my life purpose is fully to the best of my ability, but I didn't have a partner, I can live with that. And I can honestly be happy with that outcome. But with the other outcome, I know no matter how much that partner loved me or showed up for me, I would not be satisfied. So, it was like, if that became my needs, then I need to prioritize that. And so I need to stop prioritizing relationships over everything else, which I think a lot of people, obviously myself included, do or used to do.
Yeah, I think I say that same thing. Like, we're not here to be somebody's wife. And I think, you know, I've definitely kind of fell into that at one point where it's like wifey material. Like, we have to have the perfect body. We have to be so beautiful, like just to get a guy. And that's like, so not why we're here. It's ridiculous. You know what I mean? That
yeah.
A lot of women actually think that. And also what you said about the energy, it's like, yeah, we need to realize what's taking our energy. And if it's not serving us, we really need to be aware of that and put it, our energy where we want to, you know, because we can't do anything. I mean,
And I don't think it's something that just affects women either. Like, you know, it really transcends the gender, you know, the false gender binary, because this isn't about gender. It's not about sexuality. It's about our inner desires, and nothing could be more human, you know, than to want to be loved, and to want to give love. But then, you know, life happens. Everybody experience some type of trauma at some point in their life, and we build up all these blockages and walls towards receiving love and giving love. And I think whatever someone needs to do, whether it be, you know, because on the inverse, some people have a fear of sexual intimacy, and they will be celibate just to kind of appear that they're doing some type of spiritual cleanse, but really it's a deeper fear that they have of being vulnerable, you know? And so those people might need to experience casual dating and casual sex with trusted partners to reveal, you know, some type of deeper thing. But, you know, it's different for everybody. I definitely was doing the casual dating thing in excess, and it wasn't making me happy. And I thought I was doing the right thing, because I was like, oh, I'm being open-minded. I'm, you know, experimenting, figuring out what I like and what I don't like. But then my problem came when I figured out, okay, I like this, I don't like that. But then I just kept casually dating, just because that's what I was, you know, it's like you get on autopilot. And that's when I started to become unhappy with the results, obviously. But it just took me a minute to like put two and two together.
Yeah, I think what you said about like guys, if they're constantly thinking about it, it's going to suck their energy, even if whether they're having it or not. And it's just even thoughts. It's like constantly thinking that sucks your energy.
Exactly.
So it's
yes.
I mean, there's a lot about that, but I want to move on to actually. So last time we spoke, you said that you identify you use the term queer, and I'm interested in that word because I've only heard a few women consider like, say that that's how they identify. And I have gay friends that say, no, I wouldn't say queer. I don't say anything. So what does that mean, more like bi, or can that just mean totally gay? I just, you know, tell me. And then also about your preference or your sexuality in general.
I think queer as a term makes people uncomfortable because it can mean so many things. And I think people are confused by the word queer because it can mean so many things. And we're so used to, especially with things that deal with gender and sexuality and sexual expression, which are all separate things. We're used to easy labels of like man, woman, gay or straight. And the fact of the matter is that humans are just way more limitless than a binary. So I think queer means whatever you want it to mean. For me, it is an umbrella term. It can mean a lot of things. For me, it means that my sexual attraction to humans isn't limited to just cisgendered men. And to me, it's validating because it affirms that I don't just... I'm not just attracted to one type of like of experience or person. And indeed when I validate that and affirm that, I also affirm that my pleasure can come from more than one source and one place. And my pleasure is up to me. I get to decide where I experience my pleasure and from whom, and it doesn't have to be so limiting. I think a lot of people are probably queer and don't want to accept it. And I think a lot of people, maybe their queerness stops at just thinking that whatever, you know, their same gender or other gendered people are attractive. Maybe that's, or like, you know, sexually attractive. And maybe their queerness stops there. Maybe it starts at, you know, them enjoying also not just finding other people sexually attractive, but also having sex with differently gendered people. And so it can mean a lot of different things. And I encourage people to do their own research on that and to not, and to kind of, on a deeper subconscious level, maybe remove the desire to, so strongly label other people, and to think that, oh, just because you know someone's labels doesn't mean you know them, you know? I could say I'm a Black queer woman, but you still don't know me personally. Not you, but like, you know, in general, like if I were to put that, put those labels on myself, they mean something, but at the same time they don't. You know, I hope that clarifies it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of like, what, how do you want to be, or what do you identify as? And then it kind of explaining that, because it can just mean like just words and verbiage is just, has so many different meanings for whoever you are as an individual. But, so,
and language can be limiting, you know, language can be limiting in terms of what we have access to describe what actually is. Like, you know, there are new words being created all the time. For example, like in a lot of romance languages, our pronouns are only, we only have she, him, and they, but that's three categories. But, you know, there are more than three categories of how you sexually identify or identify in terms of gender. There are, you know, it's a spectrum, it's an infinite number. So that's one example of how language can be limiting in terms of, you know, it's like, okay, you call someone they, but are they more, do they, does that person affirm that they lean more on a feminine side than a masculine side, or maybe vice versa, or maybe they feel, you know, and someday they feel more feminine, someday they feel more masculine. So that's how language can limit the human experience sometimes, and why it's important to, yes, to name things and discover new, you know, possibilities, but also to keep in mind that labels in and of themselves usually have some type of finite beginning and ending that don't reflect the breadth and the expansiveness of the human spirit or the human experience.
Yeah, I think labels are dangerous because everyone has their own beliefs or past experiences with them. But I wanted to get into, well, okay, so I had a Reiki session with you, which was very powerful. And I think I love how you incorporated all of these different elements, because I'm also certified Reiki, but, you know, it's, you take that and you incorporate that with all your other modalities. And it was a really great experience. So I wanted to talk about what you do, and then also how is being a Black woman, because I've had people say that, you know, that it's challenging for them, but I'm like, actually, I know a lot of Black people in the healing community, but I wanted to hear from you if that is a thing for you. So yeah, first maybe talk about what your main business is, and then how being Black has any effect on that, or how you feel about that.
Yeah, so I have a business. I'm Reiki Medicine Goddess on Instagram, and then my website is The Medicine Goddess. And Reiki was really my like gateway energy, or like my gateway modality. Yeah, modality into the wellness world. That Reiki and yoga probably were my gateway modalities. But yeah, most of what I do, I'm also a medium, and that's like a huge part of what I do on all levels. So with the Reiki healings, with the tarot readings, with the Akashic Records readings, even in my day-to-day, you know, private spiritual practice of connecting with my ancestors and making herbal medicines, like mediumship is really the crux of it all. My ability to communicate with spirits informs everything. And so that's like a lot of what I do. And I do find that in the wellness world is very whitewashed. It can be really, you know, capitalistic and commodified in terms of these like ancient practices and people kind of entering into them with a very shallow understanding and then trying to claim, not just claim a practice, but also make a lot of money off of a practice that doesn't come from their own lineage. And that's not to say that if you don't come from a lineage, you can't practice that lineage. You can, but there's a way to do it with respect and with reverence and with, you know, without taking up so much space or trying to become the poster child for that modality, which I think, unfortunately, in the wellness world, white supremacy is a huge problem still. And there's a lot of this just rampant ignorance and lack of desire to really educate themselves. So I always make sure to tell people that, you know, my spiritual practice, you know, even though after I learned about Reiki and yoga and like Buddhism and all these other, you know, amazingly powerful modalities, my spiritual practice never amplified itself more or became more special to me than when I started honoring my ancestors. That to me was the missing link, because I was practicing these modalities that were traditionally, you know, not from where my ancestors are from. And so while yes, yoga, Reiki, those things still continue to bring me immense healing. And I continue to share, with reverence, those modalities with others, and it creates healing for them. But for me, to really connect it back to my own roots, it was important to start talking to, communicating with, giving offerings to my ancestors, because we all have ancestors and most of us ignore them, but we wouldn't be here without them. Whether you have ancestors who were good people or not good people, whatever label you want to put on your ancestors, it doesn't matter. They are still you. You still share DNA with them. They could have been, you know, royal. They could have been farmers. They could have been evil people, good people. It doesn't matter. You share their DNA. You are here because of them. And it can really be immensely healing to, for example, if you do have ancestors who maybe weren't the kindest people, it's even more important to work with them, because that pattern can become intergenerational trauma, and it can start to make you physically sick, and it can start to affect your relationships and all those things. And your ancestors need healing as well. And it's so much easier to heal when you have help, and you are your ancestors' help. And there's so many blessings and miracles and just awakened consciousness that can come about from honoring your ancestors. I think a lot of people, especially white people in the wellness world, actively ignore and reject out of fear. You know, it's simply fear, and shame and guilt and all that stuff. But yeah, that to me is like everything I do, I do in my own private practice. And I also, you know, I give all the thanks to the people whose shoulders I stand on, you know.
But okay, so do you think that your ancestors, because sometimes I have issues, so I mean, I've had some issues with it because I was adopted, and I'm like, okay, so my ancestors, like, don't you think that we've all been like white, black, whatever, Latino, like Asian. I think we could have all been everything, you know, different.
So, you mean in past lives and stuff?
Yeah. I mean, so what is your definition of ancestors? Is it just your lineage, your direct DNA? Or is it like, been so many other things or races that we know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question. And some people have really strong ideas about past lives, like in certain African countries and tribes, like they believe you only get reincarnated back into your own bloodline. So they wouldn't even think that like they were, you know, Asian or Latinx because they, unless they have Asian or Latinx people in their bloodline already. But that's, you know, other people don't think that. But I think what's more important is that, everybody, when I say ancestors, I do mean your blood relatives, because in terms of your DNA, that's who's there. But I also, there's also the concept of loved ones, of, you know, people who have raised you who maybe weren't blood related to you, or people who had a significant impact on your life, in a positive way that you want to give some reverence or honoring to. And that's completely fine. And I think especially when it comes to people who've been adopted, that's the way to go. Some people don't know who their blood relatives are. And a lot of people do. Even a lot of adopted people know who their blood relatives are, but they just weren't raised by them. And so it's important to, even if you don't know a single name of the people in your bloodline, to still call upon them, call upon the honorable ancestors, right? Because not all of our ancestors like us, not all of our ancestors want to talk to us, but some of them do. Some of them do, and some of them are ready to work with us here on the earth plane to make our lives more harmonious, more balanced, more in tune. And it's important that we ask for their help. You know, we still have free will, so a lot of spirits won't usually intercede in there until you ask. So do you feel like that answers that question?
I mean, I've met my birth family, and my birth mom is a Buddhist shaman, and it's really cool. Mm-hmm. Because I was like, oh, maybe that's kind of how I got, like, how I am.
Exactly.
But sometimes I'm like, maybe I have double the ancestors and double the healing work that I need to do for everybody. But it's, you know, it's just, I kind of think of it as the line of like the channel and the communication of the source that is guiding and protecting you. I'm still working on that because I feel like, you know, we're all connected. So, but yeah, I mean, like, it's not like I see a face like of an Asian man, you know, like coming to me or a white person or whatever, you know, like you don't really, it's not really like that. So it's kind of hard to tell. I mean, maybe sometimes you can see a very clear visual,
and I think in terms of like epigenetics and things like that, and chronic illnesses, predispositions, like life skills, all those things are passed down through our DNA. A lot of them are, some of them are learned, just like, you know, just like it is normally. But a lot of our deeper subconscious, like, shit that we need to deal with in this life is an intergenerational thing, meaning that you're not the first one in your family to deal with that problem. Mm-hmm. So why wouldn't you want to, ask someone who's already lived a full life, or ask many people, you know, who've already lived that experience, how they dealt with it, what suggestions they have, what they've learned, you know? We all read reviews on Yelp and shit before we go to restaurants. Like, why, why wouldn't you also, like, you know, want to tap into some previous wisdom of someone who's already done it, you know? Yes. And that's really my perspective with ancestor work. I think it's advanced work, to be honest, if you haven't been doing it before, or if you don't work with elders who can guide your way. But I think we all get to a point in our inner growth of needing to address these deeper issues. You know, it's like unavoidable. So once you get to that level and it's like you've tried all the external things and nothing's changing, it might be time to tap into, the ancestral, experiences and wisdoms.
Totally. I mean, I definitely know that I'm healing for them, but I'm like, I don't know who they are totally. Like, I haven't had, sometimes I have really clear visions and sometimes I don't. And that's one where I'm still kind of figuring it out. But I did have a recent ayahuasca ceremony and it really brought me back to that. But do you want to talk a little bit about the lineage that you're working with now? Is it like a black lineage, or you know what I mean? Because I never heard of it, and I don't remember how all the terms that you're saying that you're going to be a priest, yeah, things like that. If you want to just talk briefly about that.
So I practice Ifa, which is from West Africa, Yoruba land. It's the ancient African traditional religion. It has just as many like rules and regulations and hierarchies as any other religion. It's just one of the most ancient religions on planet Earth. So that's the lineage. And what happened, how it came to the West was the slave trade. So they stole all these Africans and brought them over to the Americas in the Caribbean. And the religion of the people came with them, obviously. And it started to blend with the people that were already on the land, and as well as the colonizers themselves. So things like that are, you know, more people have heard of, like Santeria or Lucumi or Candomblé, which is in Brazil. Those are also in the umbrella of Ifa, but they are what the religion kind of shifted into to survive in those new on those new lands. So Candomblé is in Brazil, Lucumi is a lot based in Cuba, Santeria is also based in Cuba, but Lucumi and Santeria are kind of like all over the Caribbean and South America. But what I'm trying to say is that people of all races now practice this religion. There are people in my own Ile who are white, who are Latinx, who are Asian. And it is something where if you're not, of African descent, you probably want to go to an elder within the tradition to make sure that you have permission to practice. Just don't assume, that because you are black, that you have a right to practice, and don't assume that because you aren't black, that you don't have a right to practice, if that makes sense. Hopefully it does to people. This is what the religion is it's an earth-based tradition, just like almost every indigenous practice is, but, what we revere are these forces of nature. So the different, the different energies or deities within the system kind of all represent these immensely powerful cosmic forces. I'm just a beginner in this, so I'm really not qualified to go on and on about what the tradition really is, because I myself haven't fully dived into that yet. What I do. So a lot of that is in my ancestry. People in my family have practiced it before, that's what
I just love how, you know, you did some digging and you found this religion that resonates with you, because I think so many people think it's just, you know, this, that, or that, and there's so many, and it's like what resonates with you. Like, when did you find it out about it?
I was probably first introduced to it fully, about 5 or so years ago, maybe 6, but, now that I look back, actually, I've recently found out that like one of my dance teachers from when I was really little, practices the religion. And, you know, I'm sure there are other memories of me being around people who were in this tradition. I just didn't know it. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing about this tradition, especially it's an oral tradition that's over 10,000 years old. So, and because of the way that it kind of spread about the world, it became illegal in a lot of places. The slave owners, the colonizers, they made it illegal for these African people that they'd stolen from their own land to practice their own religions and speak their own languages, similar to how they did with the indigenous American people and, you know, all the other countries that the colonizers colonized and imperialized. So to be back in a tradition that does reflect more my ancient ancestors is a great feeling. It's not for everyone. And I was raised Christian. I still respect Christianity. I respect Christ consciousness a lot. And I don't see me ever not respecting it. And Abrahamic religions in general are, I respect anyone's religious decisions, as long as they aren't causing harm to other people. And that's kind of it.
Nice. Well, I'd like to, I'm definitely interested in how that goes for you. I guess I kind of just wanted to touch on the Black Lives Matter and that's it. And then we'll close it out. Is there anything, I'm just kind of curious on your take of the issue and how it's such a major, thing in media right now. I have one other question. Like, do you think it seems a little suspect that it always seems to come up during an election year? Have you noticed that as well? I mean, I know it's like a thing that's really happening, but just that they show it so much in the media right before an election.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really give a lot of thought to like the conspiracy theory behind it. Like, you know, people are calling it race wars and stuff. And I don't really care to think of it that way, because regardless if it happens during an election year or not, it's a huge issue. It's something that we as a country need to address and have been needing to address for hundreds of years. So when it happens or doesn't happen isn't really relevant to me. What matters is that it happens, and that we affect some type of change from these actions and conversations that's lasting. So that to me is more important than, you know, trying to think of it as like, oh, these are just to distract us and, you know, whatever. I think a lot of people are very close-minded and they don't want to challenge the status quo because they're just so used to it being what it is, and change is scary for almost everybody. But change is like one of the only constants of the universe, and I'm very proud and grateful to be Black, to hold this frequency of melanin, and to have a family that is also proud to be Black. And I hope that people start to show up for Black people and Black lives and Black livelihood the same way that they show up for Black culture, and the same way that they, you know, the same way they love Black culture, I wish the world would love Black people. And so that's really, to me, what I hope comes about from all of this. Mm-hmm. And to just, I want people to kind of just relax into the idea that you can care about more than one thing at a time. Because, you know, there's also all this, a lot of things are coming to the light, not just Black Lives Matter, but, you know, all the sex trafficking rings and you know, abuse to children, all the immigration issues, just all of the things are coming to light. And it's okay to care about more than one of these things at a time. And we don't, and it's a very scarcity type of mindset to be like, oh, the race wars are a distraction to the real issue, which is pedophilia. It's like, no, they're both issues. They're both extremely horrible issues that are happening, and we can care about both of them, and we can work towards creating a reality where we don't have to suffer due to race, and we don't have to live in a world where there are where there's sex trafficking and pedophilia and stuff like that. We have the power to create a reality void of those things, but if we get distracted by trying to say, oh, this one's more than that and this more than that, it's like that misses the mark for me. And nobody's saying with Black Lives Matter that Black Lives Matter more or that they matter the most. We're just saying that this is an issue that needs to be addressed finally. It needs to be addressed on all levels, socially, economically, politically, internally, externally, like it just needs to be addressed. It's time. And all those other intense issues that are happening need to be addressed at the same level. So it's like, you know, buckle up, y'all, because it's like, it's not going to get any easier. And we're really at an amazing space of potential in terms of how we want to move forward. And I hope people can open up their minds and hearts enough to not make this a competition and instead, you know, work towards eradicating the things that keep human beings, suffering eternally, you know? It goes deeper than just one issue. It's several things that human beings have been doing, that only create suffering for everyone involved, and they need to stop. You know, that's definitely one of the things that's come through to me in taking and going on sacred plant medicine journeys. Like, you know, the horrors of racism, the horrors of rape and things like that, and sexual violence. Like, that's one of the worst things that can that you can do. Exploitation, like, you know, lying, stealing, like all of these things create suffering, and we have enough abundance to make that not so, but we just haven't all decided that that's what we want to do yet. So I hope we just all decide that we do want change, and I hope we all decide to take right action to create that change.
Yeah, I think it starts with everyone needs to do their own healing and teach the children also the right way, you know? I think that's a major thing that needs to happen for the next generation to come so this doesn't happen. But did you partake in any protests?
I protested a lot back when Black Lives Matter first took to the streets and on a national level. So that was back in 2015, 2014, I believe, around that time. For me, right now, it doesn't serve me. What am I trying to say? The gifts and abilities that I have aren't best used and utilized by going to protests. I am more better serving the movement as a whole by sharing information online, showing up for healing services for the community, and making myself available in that way. And that's more of where my gifts lie. And I think that's how we all should be approaching these moments of change. It's like, how can I best use the gifts, abilities, and access to resources that I have to affect the most amount of change possible? And as a Black woman, honestly, I don't want to go march in the streets. That's not my job. That should be the job of people who aren't Black, is to put their bodies and lives on the line for once, for change for someone else. My ancestors have done that. My families have done that. It's not my time to do that. It's my time to organize on the back end for once. I haven't been going to the protests, but, and it's also, it's a personal choice. So if you are Black and you want to go to the protests, by all means. I'm also a medium and I don't need to be in a crowd of 100,000 people, connecting subconsciously with someone's dead grandma. I need a little bit more energetic shielding.
I think the most powerful thing that Black people can do, one of the things, well, 1A is sharing powerful Black people, like intelligent Black people, successful Black people, just sharing their stories and being showing up as that person, which you're doing. And I think that's so powerful in itself. And that's, I hope we possibly did that today. So I just, seriously, it's like being that beauty, that goddess, like every day. And people see that and it's like, oh, that's a beautiful Black woman. She's got her shit together. Like, she just exudes this confidence and this, you know, this light. So
yeah, it's like the I forget who said this, but like, the one of the best things you can do for Black people is just let us be great, and don't get in our way of doing that, of being great, because that's kind of, there are so many stories of Black people being, ready to take on more positions of power, of influence, of change, and the world at every turn, blocking them from doing so, blocking them from being the best version of themselves simply because of their race or their gender. That's true. Amplifying the voices of Black and Brown people, making sure that they have the opportunity to be their greatest self instead of, being limited by these antiquated, markers of what a good person is or isn't.
Yeah. I mean, I wish the media would just not show just the criminals, show the people that are really doing things,
I wish the news in general was more, letting us know about, and this is a choice the news stations make too, like of what stories to tell. Like, there are so many. We could be using the news stations to amplify the work of nonprofit organizations who are really doing change in the world, and amplifying, kind of how it is on social media of people sharing, like, hey, so-and-so is getting a surgery, or their dog died, or they're having a funeral and they can't cover the costs. Like, and then the community can show up and support them. The media could do the same thing on a huge level, but they choose to only show and tell stories that create fear and separation and trauma.
The news is like totally controlled. Like, I don't even want, that's a whole other topic. Like, I don't
a whole want, other topic. Fake, yeah.
Fake. It's literally fake. But thank you so much for being you and doing what you're doing and showing up for not just Black people, but for the world. So thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you.
Camille's website is themedicinegoddess.com. And her Instagram is Reiki Medicine Goddess. So this is the Moon Mason podcast. The Moon Mason Experience. Thank you for joining us.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. It was really great connecting with you.